Vi ska ju faktiskt ha livepod.
Ja, 18 maj, Rigoletto.
Jag kommer inte ens nämna stolarna.
Nej.
För det har jag pratat om.
Ja.
Nu ska vi prata om showen.
Ja, bara kort då, bara för de som inte vet. Alltså, ja. Alltså stolarna, man kan reclina dem, ja, och ligga som Joey och Chandler, ja, i Friends. Och så har man en QR-kod, så trycker man på vilken sprit man vill ha. Och så drar man in en GT för, ja, 160 kronor. Och sen så kommer den till ens
till
plats.
Ja, det finns så mycket benutrymme också att servitörer kommer kunna gå helt ostört.
Vet du vad det är? Det är som business class.
Ja, verkligen. Och när vi då pratar om stolarna, ska också bara säga, man kan fälla upp mitten armstödet, så,
ja,
får man en soffa
med sin partner. Ja, det kommer bli jättetroligt.
Och men vi kommer också ha stolarna.
Ja, vi kommer också ha typ 2 fotbollslag på scenen.
Ja. Det kommer alltså, vara, alltså det är svårt att rabbla upp alla i huvudet nu, för det är så många.
Ja.
Men alltså Mattssons massaker, tänk till den live.
Mm.
Jonas Dahlqvists frågelåda.
Mm.
Ekis, Lady Damer. Vi har Fanny Svärd, Marve, Gillen, Tora.
Tjejnytt gör comeback.
Det är, ja, det är på en nivå av mycket folk.
Ja, det kommer bli något helt annat. Någonting man aldrig har sett.
Nej.
På scen, tror jag.
Det kommer ha allt. Allt kommer finnas.
Cirkus. Och, cirkus. Och det som är skönt med de där slutna rummen är också att man kan ju faktiskt ta upp saker som man ibland känner att det här kan man inte riktigt ha ute i eten.
Nej.
Men om Sanna Dolan har fått någon invit från någon gift känd man, så kanske man kan lägga upp det på en bioduk.
Ja, alltså vi har tillgång
fotoförbud,
till
fotoförbud.
Exakt, vi har faktiskt tillgång till bioduken.
Mm.
Alltså gott snack upp på stora bioduken.
Mm.
Det är något nytt. Missa inte det här.
Nej, det kommer bli otroligt kul. Biljetterna på filmstaden.se. Ta med en god vän, så tar vi med oss Johan Rabeus.
Exakt. Och det kommer också vara, det är så mycket
förfest, efterfest.
I, ja, den här Rigoletto-baren.
Det kommer vara en hel dag. Liksom. Det kommer vara en hel dag.
Ja, och sen det är såklart alkohol, allting, bara beställ in till platserna ni sitter på. Ni kommer liksom vara så bekväma, ni kommer ha kul.
Är förfesten bara för Patreon eller? Ja, vi får kika på det.
Vi får kika på,
ja,
det.
Mm. Kommer en hel dag i alla fall. Och så det blir det någon slags efterfest bli. Också.
Ja, gud ja.
Mm.
Vad är en gott snack livepod utan efterfest?
Gud, det kommer bli så kul. Så länge sedan vi hade livepod.
Ja, det ska bli skitkul.
Ja, vi ses där, hörni.
Men, vart köper man biljetterna?
Filmstaden.se.
Ja, in och köp.
Tack på gott snack där.
18 maj.
Puss, hej. Hej.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh. Vill ni ha lite bubbel?
Ja, bubbel är vi, ja, alltså, på denna.
Ja, men då,
ja,
ja, ja.
Bara, säger ni inte.
Varför sa ni inte det förut?
Ja, vad
så
trevligt.
Så fint flagg ni har. Det är med att ta en bild av dig.
Yay, nu kör vi.
Åh, det var god champagne.
Var det?
Shit, good.
Vad kul.
Marsch alla. Det med att ta en bild
av. Ja. So happy. Rickard Julin. Okej, okay, så... So. Hello and welcome to this special episode of Gott Snack with Dr. Mats Gilbert. Is that?
Shukran jazilan, som vi säger på arabisk, och salam alaikum. Och så, siden vi är... Oh, we are in the time of the Eid, we have to say Eid Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak.
Okay, so it's a sunny, lovely Saturday here in Stockholm, Sweden. And for those who don't know you, and I hope actually that a few of those listening right now don't know, because I'm thinking if you know about you and your work, then you're probably on the right side of history, so to speak. And I hope that some of our listeners are more of those who are not maybe fully aware or fully convinced. Like we are. Yes. So for those who don't know you, who are you?
Well, I'm a I'm a simple peasant boy from Norway. I am a medical doctor, born in Oslo, raised there, medical school there. Been living all my medical life, my professional life, and my life in northern Norway, because I like the outskirts, you know. I like to be in the remote places. Mm-hmm. So Tromsø is my hometown, which is a very northern town in Norway. It's actually the northernmost university city in the world. So we have we're now going towards the midnight sun, and we've been through the winter with no sun. And I'm a specialist in anesthesiology and emergency medicine. So I've been a very active clinician, doctor, working with, you know, emergencies and trauma, and been riding with an ambulance helicopter for many years. And I've been the clinical head of the Clinic of Emergency Medicine at the University Hospital of North Norway in Tromsø. And I'm also a professor at the Arctic University of Norway. So I've been a clinician, a doctor, trying to help people. Always been very concerned with how we can offer a healthcare system that is equal for everyone. If you live in the glesbygdene, in the outskirts, or if you live in the big city like Stockholm or Oslo, you should have the right to the same quality and the same type of treatment for the most important diseases. Of course, something has to be specialized and centralized. But I've been working very much with training of local teams and how to establish a good preparedness in the local communities, in the rural areas. And then I've been working a lot in the Global South with Solidarity Medicine. I've been teaching a lot, training people in Burma, Cambodia, Angola. And then I've been working with the Palestinians since 1981, when I went on my first...
Wow.
Emergency surgical team that we set up with the Norwegian Palestine Committee, which is a very old solidarity committee for Palestine, pretty much as old as the Palestina Gruppen in Sweden.
All right.
I think we started approximately at the same time. So I've been engaged with the Palestinian healthcare system since the 80s, and for the last 20 years I've been working in Gaza. So every time the Israelis are bombing, I travel to Gaza with a team, and we try to fit into the Palestinian healthcare and to be shoulder to shoulder to our brothers and sisters in Palestine, and to do whatever they want us to do to support and strengthen and be in solidarity with them in the practical work also. And I do research and as I said, teaching at the Al-Azhar University in Gaza. People don't know that there are universities in Gaza. They have two.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. That's right. They have bombed all of them.
Oh, no.
So that's basically my background. I've written a few books about Gaza, and I travel 2 to 4 times a year to Gaza. Now I've been expelled and refused entry by the Israeli occupation army because they don't want me in.
Well, and when did you leave?
They allowed me to go in if they could cut my tongue. No. I'm kidding. No. I went down on the 9th. No, on the 8th of October. I traveled to Cairo last year. So the day after it started. And then I was four months in Cairo trying to get in.
4 months?
Yeah.
Trying to get in?
Yeah. And then I did a lot of work, medical work, and also worked in Jordan and in South Africa. With advocacy and with information spread, interviews, And then I worked with the all the attempts to get medical supplies in. So I was part of the team that designed the stuff that the Jordanian airplanes airdrops with parachutes into Gaza. They were the first one to do that. Mm. And that was extremely brave and much more focused and meaningful than the stupid things the Americans have been doing.
Mm. When they dropped the...
When they dropped things in the head and killed the people they're supposed to help. Oh. Because why is that stupid? It's stupid because there are shitloads of trucks sitting outside Rafah, as long as your eye can see, you see the trucks. And they've been sitting there for 5 months with food, with water, with medical supplies. Mm. And Israel do not want to let them in. So the easy thing, instead of all these stupid things with the airdrops and that, you know, they're going to build that harbor and all that, it's only to open the border. Or the it's not a border, it's a fence around Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And let the trucks in. I have the last numbers here in this last UN report. These very saturated reports come every second day. This one is from day 184, and it's called Flash Update. Mm. Normally, Gaza needs 500 trucks per day to sustain life because Gaza has been under siege by the Israelis since 2007. So they need 500 trucks to have the 2.2 people surviving.
Mm.
During this attack, the Israelis have cut it to zero, and then there has been pressure. And this graph here is showing the number of truckloads per day through these 6 months. And what you can see is that the average maximum has been around 100, meaning 20% of what was the normal need. And when you have bombing and you close down everything and bakeries and shops and everything, of course, you need not one fifth, but you need five times more. So it should have been maybe 2,500 trucks. Mm. And now it's been around 100. So it's an active man-made starvation of the Palestinian people.
So you've not been able to enter?
No, not this time.
During this time, no. And what was the last time you were there before this war?
I was there in June last year. I was there in February last year. And I was going back actually in October last year because I've been working with cancer care in Gaza the last few years. And many people don't know this. You know, I call it medical apartheid. You know, the word apartheid means to separate people. We had it in South Africa. They waged a long struggle, an armed struggle supported by international solidarity, and they won. And we had Nelson Mandela coming out of the prison, and today, you know, it's a democracy. And the medical apartheid is that two groups, ethnic groups of people, or two classes of people, whatever you want, men and women, it could be. But in Palestine, it is Palestinians and Israelis. Palestinians in Gaza are not allowed to have radiation therapy for cancer. You know, cancer, it's three things. It's surgery.
Mm-hmm.
It's
chemo.
Chemo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And it is radiation.
Mm.
And with these three treatment modalities, you can really make a fantastic survival. So for women with breast cancer...
Mm.
In Norway, and I guess in Sweden, and in Israel, the five-year survival probability is 95, 96, 97%, meaning 9 out of 10 will survive. Mm. Very good news for the women. Meaning if you have breast cancer, which is a very common cancer type, we have so good diagnostic and treatment modalities. In Gaza, the Palestinian women who contract breast cancer, they will not have radiation therapy in Gaza. They will have to go to Jerusalem, to Augusta Victoria Hospital, because that's the only radiation machine in Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
So what is their 5 years chance of surviving? About 60%.
Mm, wow. Mm.
So they die from a disease that is curable because the Israelis are practicing medical apartheid.
Mm.
If a Palestinian woman is wounded today in Gaza, say she's pregnant and they bomb her house and she has shrapnels to her body and she needs immediate surgery to survive. What is her alternative in Gaza today? It's maybe, you know, just they have a door or, you know, something to carry her on. They don't have ambulances anymore. The Israelis have destroyed 129 ambulances in Gaza. And then they bring her to a hospital, if there is a hospital. There are only 8 functioning hospitals left in Gaza. And maybe to an operating room, if there is an operating room, because there is only 20 operating rooms left in Gaza for 2.2 million people, which is nothing. So she might have some life-saving measures, like somebody stop the bleeding, somebody keep her airway open, but to do major surgery on her, not likely now. Blood transfusion, not possible. Why? Because of a man-made destruction of the Palestinian healthcare system. But if a female Israeli soldier has the same injury 400 meters away, what will happen to her? She will be taken care of by a highly sophisticated medical military team, and then there will come a military medical evacuation helicopter from the Israeli armed forces, land, pick her up, and fly her into a sophisticated surgical hospital in Israel. Two women, same injury. The one will die, the other one will have a great chance to survive. This is medical apartheid. We don't want that in the world. We don't want these systems. We don't want a system where people are classified according to ethnicity. We want people to be equal. And that was the struggle in South Africa. It was for equality, that you were black shouldn't matter if you could, if you wanted to go to school, if you wanted to be a doctor, whatever. So what we have in Gaza and in Palestine and in Israel is a deep-rooted apartheid system. And I'm not the one saying that. All the organizations who have investigated, the big humanitarian and human rights organizations like Amnesty and Al-Haq and all the others have said, and even the committees in the UN have said, Zionism and the system in Israel is an apartheid system. And that is, interestingly, that is actually forbidden according to the UN Charter. Apartheid is forbidden. And yet Israel goes on. But I think in my field in medicine, this very, very striking difference between the medical care for a person from Israel, a Jewish person from Israel, and a Palestinian Arab from Gaza or from the West Bank, from Palestine, occupied Palestine. It's so shockingly different that I think all of your listeners will say, I don't believe it. He must be fantasizing. No, I am not.
Yeah, that was my question. I'm just going to talk to her because I just realized we could go live. So I just turned on the live stream and we have a little people chatting and listening. And they were like, who's talking? Because I turned it on before I did the introduction. So those who are live now, a few guys here in the chat. This is Dr. Mats Gilbert, who has been in Palestine and Gaza many, many times and worked with the Palestinians. And well, my question was, I guess, how much do you think is people don't know and how much is people don't care?
If I should answer that, I think my answer would be that probably they know too little because they are being lied to. Because the mainstream media, the big media machine, the big lie machine, is not telling the truth. I used to say that if ordinary people, your listeners, anybody around the world, could have 2 minutes of unfaked, unedited, real-time images from Gaza every day before the news or every day before the Champions League, whatever soccer people are watching, they would say, we're not going to accept this. This is not the world we want. Stop it. We don't want anybody to be treated that way. Palestinian, Israeli, South African, Tamil, Kashmiri, anybody. This is not the world we want. But the powers, the colonial powers in particular, they lie to us all the time. And Israel even has their own department of propaganda called the Hashbara. And the Hashbara is a huge machinery distorting the narrative of what's going on in Palestine. So I would say that I don't think it's only that they are ignorant or they are, you know, unengaged or they don't care. it is that the truth of Palestine, and in particular the truth in Gaza, is filtered so heavily, distorted and lied about in so many ways that people get the wrong understanding. So you have to search for your own knowledge. You have to. You can go to these flash updates from the UN. They come every day. You can subscribe to it. It's filled with actual facts.
But how about the people in Israel? How much do they know?
I don't know. I mean, they are in a bubble, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it is, I don't know, it's such a sad thing. And I've been asked this question very many times.
Mm.
How can a people who experienced Holocaust
yes.
treat another people in this way? And then we need to be very sharp. Because it's not the Jewish people. It is a Zionist political system. These are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And Zionism was a European political construct from before 1900, actually, who wanted to create a homeland for the Jews. This is a political movement, and it's been a colonial movement, actually. We have had colonial European movements in many countries. I mean, the Belgian Congo, the French and Algeria, the Portuguese and Mozambique. Mm. I mean, Europe was all colonial,
yeah.
like the US.
Mm.
And they didn't mind stealing and grabbing and killing the indigenous people. So it's not the Jewish people. And I'm, you know, I guess many of your listeners are very careful now. Oh, maybe he's an anti-Semite. Don't you dare call me an anti-Semite.
Mm.
I have never been a racist. I'm a profound anti-racist. If any of my Jewish friends was to be prosecuted or mobbed or in any way had any mistreatment, I would put on a yellow star and defend them mm-hmm. with my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragic thing is that people mix Judaism and the religion of Judaism with Zionism.
Mm-hmm.
And Zionism is a political movement which is a colonial occupation politics. They got half of Palestine in 48 without the consent of the Palestinians when the UN said we divide Palestine in two and Israel will be half of it and that's going to be the home of the Jewish people.
Mm.
And immediately, even before 48, they started to expand. And then they have been expanding and expanding and expanding in every one of these wars that have been. And every day, I mean, in the midst of this Gaza disaster, they grab more land in the West Bank.
Yeah, because all eyes are on.
Yeah, exactly, in the fog of Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are settler attacks in the West Bank that are just horrendous.
Mm.
Hundreds of settlers go in with arms and supported by the Israeli army, go into Palestinian villages and cities, burn the cars, burn the homes, steal the land, cut down the olive trees. What the fuck is this?
Mm.
What the world is it that we have? And all this with the backing of the United States. You know what? I'll give you some numbers. Can I give you some numbers?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. I was just looking over the last United Nations numbers, reports from Gaza. And until the 8th of April, a few days ago, the Israeli occupation army in Gaza, they have killed more than 33,000 Palestinians. 33,000 in 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
And 76,000 wounded. And among the 33,000 killed, numbers are not meaningful when you talk about killed people because you need to see the person. But I guess you've seen it on social media, many of you.
Mm-hmm.
Among the 33,000 killed, there are... Do you know how many children they have killed in 6 months?
I would guess somewhere around 15,000, maybe?
Yeah.
10,000?
That's not bad. 13,000.
Oh. Mm.
That means that they have been killing 72 children on an average every day for 180 days. 72 Palestinian children killed every day. That actually means 2 per hour around the clock for half a year. So if we're sitting here for 1 hour and talking, they have killed 2 more kids. And it's a number that is almost incomprehensible. And it is actually, according to UNICEF, they say that the number of children killed by Israeli governmental forces in Gaza is higher than the total number of children killed during all world conflicts globally for the last 4 years. It's totally madness, and they get away with it. How many kids have the Russian army killed in Ukraine? I don't know it, but I looked at it. It's a number which is far, far away from this. Yet against Russia, Europe impose sanctions, blockade. They send them weapon. They send them political support. All things. So what's the difference between the occupation of Palestine and the occupation of Ukraine? Well, I would say not very much. Only in that the occupation of Palestine, it's much more brutal, and it has lasted since 1948. It's a horrendous situation. And 17,000 children in Gaza have been made homeless and without family, meaning they have survived without surviving family. Mm. It's a whole new group of war victims, whole new group. And it's so painful.
Next level of trauma.
Yes.
It's next level of sadism.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Because a lot of what is going on in Gaza has no military purpose. Has nothing to do. I mean, if you say that you kill 15,000 children, 13,000 children, because you're defending your country, what the hell are you doing then? And if the United States and if the Swedish government, who actually, by the way, during the first weeks or the first month actually said they would not support a ceasefire. What happened to Sweden?
Mm.
What happened to Olof Palme?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What happened to Folke Bernadotte?
Yes.
Your heroes of justice. Your outspoken people.
Mm.
And you know, Folke Bernadotte was murdered by these people, the same people who are now bombing Gaza.
Mm.
Because that was the Irgun and the Stern gangs, the Zionist thugs, who actually murdered Folke Bernadotte. Nobody was ever sentenced for it.
Mm.
But he was murdered because he wrote a report on the abuse of power by the Zionist terror groups in Gaza, in Palestine, in 1947-48. And he was, you know, Folke Bernadotte was a great man. He saved hundreds and hundreds of Jewish lives.
Mm.
And then he was appointed by the Norwegian Secretary General of the United Nations, the first one, Trygve Lie, to be the chief negotiator in the Middle East between Israel and Palestine. And he did a very diligent job. He actually was the founder of UNRWA. He wanted to find a peaceful solution.
Mm.
And he actually charged the Zionists for their crimes and wrote a report, and then they killed him.
Mm.
Like they're killing anybody who opposed them or to try to criticize or confront them with what they're doing. So what happened to Sweden going from that very glorious history, and Olof Palme confronting the US in Vietnam, to now where your government is saying we support the bombing of Gaza.
Mm. Yes,
but the good thing today was the big demonstration. It was fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
Very energetic. Big crowd. Big crowd.
Mm.
So, you know, all nationalities, but a large group of Palestinians. And I think I would like to tell all the listeners, if you have a Palestinian neighbor, if you know somebody from Palestine, don't forget that they have an everyday life now, which is extremely difficult. They watch the news, they see their habitat, their homes, their villages, their cities being bombed. They call anxiously to hear if they are alive, the family. They try to send money and support, they can't get through. And they lose, and they lose, and they lose. Among these 33,000 killed, there are complete, more than 3,000 complete families that Israelis have executed and killed. It seems like they want to eradicate the DNA of the resistance. Every Swedish Palestinian, Swedish living Palestinian, has a bad morning.
Mm.
Because they had a bad night, because through the night they were watching the videos and the news. And they saw all the killed kids, and they saw all the killed men and women, and they thought, is my family alive today?
Mm.
So if you have a Palestinian friend or a neighbor, invite them for a dinner. Make a cup of tea. Sit down and listen to them. Listen to them. The most important thing for a human being in crisis is another human being. And we can all be that other human being. That's another part of the solidarity. In my language, the two most beautiful words are love and solidarity. Mm. And if we can all try to share a little bit of our energy and time with the Palestinians and take part in the demonstrations, because it's so easy to feel helpless and small and you know, you look at it and you see it.
What can I do? I'm just one person.
Mm. Yeah.
But Norway is more vocal and more in solidarity than Sweden this time around, right? Or
yeah, I'm not going to talk down Norway. But if the measuring line is zero or minus 10, it doesn't take much to be a little bit above.
We have a saying in Sweden called Greklands bästa bandylag, which means the best bandy team in Greece. Mm. And so, yeah.
well, it's a good point, but because in the start, Norway did things that that EU and Sweden did not do. Number one, our prime minister refused to call Hamas a terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. He didn't go as far as to say it's a liberation organization, because everybody's stamping them as a terrorist organization, but they resisted, my government. Mm. And number two, they increased the financial support for humanitarian work. They did not decrease it. Number three, they refused to defund UNRWA when this false, lieful rumor was put out by Israel. Mm. And then they also have been demanding a lift on the siege. Mm. That's good. They have not recognized Palestine, and they have not expelled the Israeli ambassador. They have not even called the ambassador to the Minister of Foreign Affairs to, you know, tell them that we don't support this, we really protest. Mm. And they are very vague. I saw an interview with the Prime Minister today, very vague about the recognition of Palestine, because the Spanish Minister of Foreign Affairs is in Oslo now trying to make an alliance with the Norwegian government on this important acknowledgement, recognition of Palestine as a state, because Palestine needs that support. So, it's been not too bad for the first period, but now all the pressure groups are demanding more. I don't know, Charlotte, if you can say something about the demands to the government and what they should do. We are live.
We are live.
Okay. Impose sanctions.
Yeah.
Divestment. Quit trading with the occupied territories. Mm. Those are the three main demands from. Okay. Yeah.
And you.
You know that. Yeah. Could you talk about the Norwegian oil?
No.
No, because we are very heavily invested in the occupied areas, and I think that's a big problem for Norway. Our foreign minister isn't particularly willing to talk about that, but it's serious. It's that's a crime in my mind.
Yes.
Sanna has also been to Palestine once.
Yes.
Because of a love affair.
I was in love with basketball player.
Ooh, so mashallah.
But he was American, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
But I traveled all by myself to Nablus. Hmm. So I went to first Tel Aviv, and then I took a bus to Jerusalem. And from there, I took a bus to Ramallah, and then a bus to Nablus.
Hmm. Wow, what a journey. When was this?
2016.
16?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. And what was your experience of the land?
I mean, the Palestinian people were wonderful and very warm and friendly and welcoming. I did meet some Israeli soldiers. They were all very young and very angry, and they had very much hate in their eyes. Mm. And one time I saw a soldier kicking a woman for no reason at all. But you could see that he had so much hate for her, like she was not a human. And I just went inside and hid. I didn't do anything.
What could you do?
What could you do?
No, but it's something that I think about sometimes.
Like it destroys your...
Yes. But this is not about me. So.
Well, it's about all of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is about us.
And our humanity.
Yeah, true.
Absolutely, and I think if it's about our humanity. I think the attack and the massacres in Gaza.
Yes,
is a massacre of the standards we want to keep holy in this world. And I don't mind speaking like a sort of a bishop or whatever, but life is holy. Everyone counts.
Yes.
And if Israel is allowed to massacre all these thousands of innocent Palestinians, we are on a slippery slope in this world. Because who will be next? Yeah.
But how much will it take until they are put into justice or war crimes? How much can it take until they're punished?
Well, I guess you know just as well as me that the United States, has the key. They are the lifeline. They are the umbilicus of Israel. Without the weapons support, without the financial support from Israel, they will not survive. And one of the very famous professors of history, Ilan Pappa, a Jewish professor of history, he has said that Zionism is collapsing now, and Israel has to find another way. It can no longer be an apartheid state.
The falling world... empires are often most violent when they're falling.
Exactly. Ooh. At the end of their empire time, they get very. And I've been to Gaza during many of these attacks in 2006 and 9 and 12 and 14, and we always see that when it's decided a ceasefire or the end. Then they always increase the bombing, always. The last 2-3 days are the worst.
Yes.
And then it's over.
Like you've been talking about the resistance and how they can't be defeated, and like that's the reason for attacking the hospitals, because of the anger of losing, of not getting a hold of the Palestinian resistance. That's why they attack the hospitals and the civilians in the way that they do.
Absolutely. And of course, the hospitals in Gaza and in the West Bank are important lighthouses of hope. I've been more and more calling or naming the hospitals as the palace of compassion and love. Because that's where you go. We take it for granted in Sweden and Norway. Of course, you can go to Sahlgrenska, Karolinska, whatever. There is an ambulance coming, or two, or three, or four, or five, and there is a helicopter, and there are good people. We don't have to pay for it. And when we come there, it's light, it's nice, it's warm, they have water, they have electricity, they have all these beautiful experts that take care of your mother or your child, whatever, or you. You know, we take it for granted. But in a society, hospitals are really the places you go to when you are in deep shit. You know, so to have a good healthcare system, we should appreciate that much more than we do. To have a good hospital system is really to have a safety net in your life for you and your beloved ones. So for the Palestinians in Gaza, of course, the healthcare system, not only the hospitals, but also the midwife system, the primary healthcare system, is such an important part of their life asset, their safety net, their pride, their culture. Because they've been able to build a comprehensive, state-of-the-art medical system under siege, under occupation, and they're immensely proud of it. It's part of their virtue, it's part of their sumu, their steadfastness, it's part of their safety net, really. So you cannot curb the Palestinian resistance with an intact healthcare system, number one. So they need to destroy the Israelis. and they use all sorts of stupid excuses. Number two, they want to get rid of any sign of Palestinian culture, any museum.
Yeah, that's ethnic cleansing, killing culture,
mm. Exactly.
Killing memories, archives,
absolutely,
burning,
any traces of human culture,
of the indigenous people, like the U.S. did with the Indians,
yes, yeah.
like they did, and they're doing with the Aboriginals in Australia,
yes, yeah.
My God, like they're doing in Africa and South America, Zapatistas, you know, so. This is the colonial attitude, and Israel is in many ways the focal point for a new neo-colonial time, I think. Mm. So why is this reflex support for Israel so prevalent in European governments, including the Swedish? Well, because it is the white European attitude to the global south. And that's important to understand, that why are the Israelis and the U.S. so obsessed with winning, with eradicating Hamas, because they want to eradicate any movement, any resistant movements that oppose the white supremacy in the world, because they are out for more markets, more raw material, more natural resources, more work power, and then they need to be in control. Mm. And Hamas and the Palestinian people and Jihad and whoever you talk about in the resistance, they are a deadly threat to the colonial hegemony. That's what's going on in Gaza. And that's why Israel is getting more and more desperate to bomb it flat. And that's why the US, in my opinion, is still supporting, despite the outcry from the whole world. You have to stop this. You don't kill 13,000 children. You don't starve children and pregnant women to death. You simply don't do it. Yes, we do it. Why? Because if they win, we lose.
Do you think now with the election in the United States, will something different happen if Trump wins, or where will he be in all of this?
Well, I think if let's make a funny allegory, because in 2006, as you know, there were elections in Palestine, Gaza and the West Bank, and Hamas won a landslide victory. It was a very well organized election with all, you know, all sorts of observers, and everything went nicely. And there was no doubt who won. They could have made a single government, but they made a unity government, as they always try to. It was shot down within a few weeks by the US and Israel and blah, blah.
But if you look at like the... I've seen like the election videos. Well, not the election video, but like I think it was what's his name, John Oliver, the Tonight Show. He showed like what was represented to the people in Gaza, and at that time they were not like advocating the 7th of October attacks. They were pretty moderate in their politics and their policies. So people voted for something, and then they were not allowed to vote ever again.
I disagree.
Oh.
I disagree, because it is not actually Gaza or Hamas who has been opposing a new election. That is Abbas and the PA, actually.
Okay.
So, but that's an internal Palestinian matter, and I never get involved in internal Palestinian matters. Mm. But my point is that, okay, they had a democratic election, and they elected Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, whatever you call it. And Israel disliked that. Okay, so now we have elections in the US. The people elect Trump. They get a horrible new government. So Canada dislikes that. They start bombing the United States.
That's not how we do it.
No.
That's not how we do it. You, the Swedes, elect a right-wing
yes.
government with some neo-fascists and some really these guys with white shirts and black ties and bats.
Yes.
And Norway says, we don't like that, we will bomb Sweden. No. Yeah. That's not the way it works. No. Come on. You may dislike. And, you know, I may dislike the choice of the American people. But that's their right. Yeah. And the Palestinian people have exactly the same right for sovereignty and even to choose stupid leaders.
Yeah, we don't bomb Putin or North Korea.
No.
We can sanction them. We can punish them within the borders of democracy and
But Israel has the free hands to starve people to death, to bomb them, to destroy their hospitals, because they are Hamas. Mm. What the fuck? What is that?
Yeah.
Why is Israel allowed to this completely maniac killing week after week, month after month? It's a systematic industrialized killing. Have we seen industrialized killing before? Yes, we have, unfortunately. And we saw that with Germany.
Yes.
And who is the ones running to the support of Israel now in the International Court of Justice? It's Israel. It's Germany saying that they will support Israel, blah, 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 blah. And yesterday, my good friend, Ghassan Abusita, a brilliant Palestinian plastic surgeon, worked many years in Beirut, and he's now in the UK, and he went to Gaza during the bombing, and he stayed in Shifa and in Al-Ahli Arab very bravely for 6 weeks, and then he left. Mm. Yesterday, he was invited to a Palestinian seminar in Germany where he was going to speak. And he was stopped in the airport, and he was not allowed entry to Germany.
What?
And sent back. And Ghassan is, if anybody is a hero, it's Ghassan Abusita. And not only did they refuse him entry to Germany for absolutely no reason, they also, the German police, stormed the meeting. With a swarm of police officers, cut off the electricity and chased the people out and arrested a few, even some Jews. This is, you know,
they need to deal with their bad conscience.
Yeah. Well, is that the way to do it?
No.
No, but like they have to take responsibility for their trauma.
Yes.
Yeah.
With their bad conscience and their guilt, and not weaponize it to punish the Palestinians today. That's just like being traumatized as a kid and then traumatized your partner.
Exactly.
The generational trauma just keeps on going. Instead of ending the cycle. Mm. Take responsibility for your emotional luggage and don't let it spread to the next person.
Yes. Well, I agree totally. And whatever the German government should say, they should have said, sorry, we've seen this industrialized killing before and we don't support that. You have to stop. But they dare not.
Mm.
Because they are politically hostage of their history.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zionists, they know how to squeeze their balls.
Mm. They know how to weaponize anti-Semitism.
Yeah, exactly.
Use their guilt.
Yeah.
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 But we should not forget that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of educated, very moral Jews all around the world who says no to Zionism.
Mm.
Says no to the attack on Gaza. In fact, some of those who were arrested in Germany yesterday were Jews who had the kippur with the melon, with the Palestinian colors, as they were arrested by the German police.
Mm.
So the Jewish opposition to the Zionist colonial project in occupied Palestine is growing, and that's the answer to your question about the election in the U.S.
Yeah.
More and more young Jews are turning their back to IPAC and to Zionism and allying themselves with young Palestinians and saying, we want another world.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. Like, I talked to Gabor and his son, Daniel Mate, you know, the Jewish, he's a doctor, but he's a big trauma expert and talks a lot about addiction, but also about Palestine. And I talked to Daniel, and he's like, he's one of the, like, he's in the forefront of this movement. And they get a lot of shit, you know, you self-hating Jew, you anti-Semite. Mm. That's got to be hard, you know, because to be so criticized by your own family and your own group, because they get so much shit, you know, those Jewish Voice for Peace, etc. But I think they are... the group that is going to make the change in America, that's going to make the big change over there as well.
Well, they are in fact making it as we are speaking.
Yeah.
Because they are standing very tall in many states, in the, you know, state councils and wherever they are trying to criminalize pro-Palestinian stances. They stand up and they take a hell of a personal risk. And then you have Jewish Voices for Peace. You have a lot of organizations. I know them all. I travel a lot to the U.S. to lecture. I'm going to Harvard next week or whenever it is. I have.
What's your subject there? Is about Palestine or something else?
Yeah, yeah, of course, mm-hmm. of course. No, I don't do anything but Palestine.
No, okay.
No, I don't have time.
But that's very interesting because the discussion about universities in the United States has been kind of It's been kind of heated. You know, the universities in the United States been heated. The Harvard president had was kicked out. You know,
Right.
So that's so. How who is? What do you know about the what's the feeling in at Harvard? Can you go there and talk about Palestine without having like a big crowd of protesters calling you?
Good question.
I don't know.
After 2008-09, the Operation Cast Lead. Remember that?
No, I don't.
Way back?
I don't remember it, but I've heard Norman Finkelstein talking about it. So.
Right. Yeah, right. He's a good friend of mine, by the way.
Oh, nice.
I should have brought you... I've written two books about Gaza. One is called Ice in Gaza. It's in Swedish also, translated. It's called Ögon in Gaza, Urfront. Very nice book.
Mm.
Very nice book. Mm-hmm. And the second book is called Ice in Gaza.
That's even better.
That's even better. Yes, Ögon i Gaza. No, Natt i Gaza. And that has a foreword by two Jews, Noam Chomsky and Max Blumenthal. And
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Vi sponsrar Mindler,
ja.
Sveriges största psykologmottagning online.
Ja.
Killar pratar inte alltid om hur de mår.
Nej.
Ibland, men inte alltid. Och jag vet inte, hur har du det med dina killkompisar? Frågar ni varandra hur ni mår och ställer ni en följdfråga om någon folk bara säger bra eller bra? Det här tycker jag tänker bara för kompis. Bra, hur mår du?
Ja, Nej, följdfrågor är vi nog ganska dåliga på.
Mm.
Och så har det väl varit i alla killgäng jag har varit med i.
Ja.
Faktiskt.
Och då är det ju himla tur att det finns en kompis i fickan.
Exakt.
Som heter Mindler.
För att alla har ju tillgång till den här kompisen nu för tiden.
Ja, och det är inte bara för att man ska ringa och chitta-chatta. Men det kan ju vara så att man inte riktigt vet. Alltså så här, folk har ju en tendens att ställa sina egna diagnoser idag.
Mm.
Och det kan jag känna igen mig i. Det känns kul. Mm. Men man kan ju också vara hjälpt av att faktiskt fråga ett proffs.
Ja, för den diagnosen man kan sätta är ju ofta så illa är det inte, eller jag klarar det här. Liksom.
Ja, men precis. Det är ganska vanligt, tror jag. Och då kan det vara ganska nice att faktiskt ringa upp någon. Det kan ju kännas som ett jättestort steg att så här hitta en psykolog, boka en psykolog, åka till en psykolog.
Exakt.
Det är många steg, det är många trösklar. Men bara så här, jag kan ta upp mobilen och så bara ladda ner Mindler-appen. 20 minuter senare har jag ett samtal och så berättar man om sitt liv. Och så kan ett proff säga... En legitimerad psykolog säger, ja, det låter som att du har den här problematiken, här finns en lösning. Mm. Det är ju faktiskt en revolutionerande förändring.
Men bara fatta vad skönt det skulle vara att höra om man har gått under en längre tid och tänkt så här. det är någonting fel, jag mår inte så bra.
Mm.
Och sen att någon bara, att man får det bekräftat. Mm. Men du kanske behöver hjälp.
Mm.
Det, det finns en lösning på det. Och den är så enkel.
Ja, men det är skitbra. Och man får, över 250 psykologer, man får byta om man inte klickar. Det kostar som ett vanligt vårdbesök, inga köer. Det är faktiskt toppen.
Mm. Så in och ladda ner Mindler-appen på en gång.
Surfa runt några timmar bland deras KBT-program.
Ja, och är du inte säker så är det bara fråga. Det är det som är så toppen.
Mm. Tack Mindler.
Tack.
August, vi är sponsrade av Sini.
Jag vet.
Mm, vad tycker vi om Sini? Vad är Sini?
Sini är ju ett vägbrytande i miljösynvinkel sätt att städa hemma.
Mm.
Det är alltså små brustabletter som man tillsätter bara vatten.
Helt vanligt kranvatten.
Helt vanligt kranvatten. En gång så behöver man ju få själva plastbunken.
Flaskan.
Flaskan heter det.
Mm.
Men sen behöver man ju inte en ny.
Nej.
Utan man har samma hela tiden. Man lägger bara in en ny brustablett, vatten och så har man rengöringsspray.
Det känns ju faktiskt jäkligt fånigt när man tänker på hur många liter vatten man burit hem från affären med rengöringsprodukter.
Ja, varför?
Det är väldigt oekonomiskt.
Det är tungt.
Omiljövänligt, tungt, jobbigt, besvärligt på alla sätt.
Vi fick ju sådana här testpaket av Sini.
Mm.
Jag gav ett sånt till en kompis till mig.
Mm.
Skrek ut i lycka.
Alltså?
Ja. Hon öppnar dem.
Ja.
De är alltså, det är så färgglatt.
Ja.
Det är så fint. Det tilltalar verkligen folk.
Det är väldigt tilltalande. Det är lite neonigt. Det passar i vår studio också. Så här. En gul för köket. Och så en lila för badrummet. De har olika färgkoder. Ja. Blå för
det
allround.
Det är så skönt med färgkoder. Det är underskattat med färgkoder i vardagen.
Ja.
Jag öppnar bara ställskåpet. På en sekund så de håller i rätt flaska.
Just.
Det har aldrig hänt förut.
Nej. Ja, det är en revolution inom städ.
Mm.
Roligare, enklare, miljövänligare, billigare.
Mm.
Så när det är slut, då går man bara till matbutiken och så köper man en liten brustablett.
Mm.
Det är ju genialt.
Det är helt underbart.
Det bästa som har hänt städning i hemmet under min livstid.
Mm. Det har aldrig varit så här kul att städa.
Eller hur?
Alltså på riktigt.
Ja.
Att jag tar kökssprayen, sprayar lite, torkar av och så bara det är glansigt på min diskbänk.
Älskar.
Och sprayerna finns alltså att köpa i de flesta matbutikerna.
Mm. Tack, Sini.
Tack för allt.
Mm. I think that these conscientious Jews like Max Blumenthal, if you follow his tip, here is a good tip.
Mm.
Follow his gray zone.
Gray zone.
Mm. It's Max Blumenthal's outlet. It's extremely updated and good. And the other one is, of course, Electronic Intifada.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an American news outlet, pro-Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very intense, very good journalism. Electronic Intifada. Mm-hmm. They have a live stream every night summing up the situation. And this is one of the few places you can get updated information about the military situation in Gaza, which is completely obliterated in all the major news channels.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the suffering and the hunger and the killed and blah, blah, making us believe that the Palestinian people has turned into a bag of beggars who is going to be supported by the mercy of Europe and the US, and we're going to turn Gaza into a new Afghanistan, a completely donor-dependent society, which is far away from, you know, independency and the right to sovereignty. But if you listen to evening casts in Electronic Intifada, you will get the videos from the resistance, the Qassam brigades. And that's the problem for Israel. They have not been able to fight down the Palestinian resistance. Now, I don't support Hamas, I don't support Fatah, I don't support Jihad, I don't support PFLP or any of the Palestinian armed groups or political movements. Like the Norwegians, and I believe the Swedish solidarity movement, I support the Palestinian people.
Mm.
And their right to resist occupation with arms, just as we support the Ukrainian people to resist the Russian occupation with arms. Is it so difficult? Why should we have a double standard?
Mm.
Why shouldn't we have the same standard for all? And the difference between the Russian occupation of Ukraine and the Israeli occupation of Palestine is, in fact, that the Israeli occupation of Palestine is much more brutal, much more vicious, and has lasted for more than 70 years. Why shouldn't we support that?
Mm.
So I support the occupied people's right to resist with arms, because that is anchored in international law. Mm. We
should it be controversial at all?
No.
Mm. No, not at all. Not at all.
But they're and not white.
Exactly. They're not white. They're Muslim. That's right.
Yeah.
They're not white.
Yeah. They're exactly. terrorists.
So, yeah, they're
terrorists.
The children are terrorists.
Yeah.
To be, at least.
To be.
Yeah. Mm. So better nip it in the bud.
Yeah, better.
But that's part of the problem with Zionism also, that they define the target as a subhuman target.
Mm.
And at the core, at the very serious core of what's going on in Gaza and in the West Bank, is that we are seeing a full-fledged racist colonial apartheid system, not in the making, but in the working.
Mm.
And what we're seeing, these numbers that I told you, that they are allowed to kill 13,000 Palestinian children in 6 months, two per hour for 6 months, is a very disturbing example of how short we have come to eradicating colonial racism. Because it is in the white mindset of Europe that the black and the melanin rich and the colored people are less worthy than us.
Mm.
We can use them as slaves and we can kill them as slaves. Mm. That's what's going on in Gaza. And we need to stand up, because if you don't make a choice on these issues, your children, your grandchildren will suffer.
Yes.
Because they will come after us.
Have you received any backlash for standing up for Palestine?
No, I've been denied access to Gaza by Israel after 2014, when I wrote that book, Night in Gaza. They denied me access for a few months, and then I've been traveling two, three times a year to Gaza since 2015. And now I was not allowed in, which was very painful, of course, because I wanted to be there, but otherwise, no. And the day they want to take me out, they kill me. I don't worry, you know. Mm. If you are becoming like a witness that is dangerous to them and they want to get rid of you, they get rid of you.
Mm.
Don't spend a second on worrying about what the Israeli intelligence can do with you. When they want to kill somebody, they kill them.
Mm.
Look at the bombing of the Iranian consulate and embassy in Damascus. They don't fucking care about any international rules. They do what they want with the support of Uncle Sam.
They're like a really, really spoiled baby that has been curled.
They're like a mafia with big arms, with their own army. They are really a danger to the world community.
I don't want to celebrate that, but we need to.
But again, I just want to
I just
really want to underline that. Dare you not call me an anti-Semite?
No.
Dare you not even try to call me a racist?
No.
And dare you not try to criminalize the Swedish solidarity movement, who are bravely standing up against the Swedish government policies and the right wing here, by simply trying to paralyze them with stamping them as anti-Semites.
Mm.
We are not anti-Semites.
Mm.
We are conscientious. We know the history. We have been supporting the Jewish people. I would support any people who are exposed to racism, occupation, and colonial bombing.
Yes.
I've been working with the Tamil Tigers. I've been working with the people in Cambodia.
And I would oppose all occupying people, whether they're Jewish, Arab, Swedish.
Yes.
From the Netherlands, whoever is stealing land, I would say, back off, motherfucker.
Mm. Yes.
And back off, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
No, I agree. No, but if you look at the European, the convulsions in Europe, when it came to releasing or letting go of the colonies, nobody did.
Mm.
The occupied people, the colonized people, all had to fight their own struggle.
Yeah.
Because the European colonial reflexes are so deep-rooted, because we actually, all the wealth we have, all the beautiful societies and the wealth...
It's built on imperialism.
It's built on stolen goods.
Yeah.
We have stolen their workforce. Mm-hmm. We've stolen their natural resources. We've stolen their people. And we should be ashamed. And until Europe wakes up and realizes its own collective guilt, we will not get a change in the system.
Yeah. And that's we understand the root causes and mechanisms behind this.
Yeah.
It's not about Palestine and Israel. It's about the white supremacy.
Yeah.
We think we have the right to steal land, natural resources, and go and try to educate the wild indigenous people all over the world because they're not civilized, and we have a higher standard of life, and we feel
we go out and help people understand reality,
how they should live their lives.
And that's so they should do it like us.
Yeah.
So entitled.
There is a very good book if you want to read that by Frantz Fanon, the famous Algerian first minister of culture in the first free Algerian government. It's called Black Skin, White Masks.
Mm. Mm.
And it is about how the occupied people or how the colonized people have to put on a white mask in order to serve and to, you know,
fit in.
To fit in, right. So in a way, we need to educate ourselves. Yeah. We need to educate ourselves.
Yeah.
And our weapon, I think, our strong weapon is solidarity.
Yeah.
And like Charlotte and the solidarity groups in Norway, solidarity groups in Sweden, it's such a powerful tool. It's peaceful, it's nonviolent, it's legal, and it has an immense power. And the first president of the Free Mozambique, Samora Machel, he was a guerrilla fighter, he was a terrorist, he became the first president when they liberated themselves through the armed struggle from Portugal. He said, quote, "Solidarity is not an act of charity. It is an act of unity between people fighting on different terrains towards the same goal," unquote. I think it's a beautiful quote.
Mm.
Because he says at the end of the day, when we do a solidarity demonstration here, we are joining forces with the Palestinian people in Gaza who try to fight for human conditions.
Mm.
And we want to protect our human conditions. And they are, in fact, the ones helping us to protect our human conditions.
Yeah.
Because if they give up, if they surrender, who's next?
Mm. Yeah. And if someone would occupy Sweden and bomb the hell out of us, I would feel very abandoned by the world if people said, there's no innocent.
Oh, they're terrorists.
Mm. They're terrorists. There's no innocent in Sweden.
Yes.
it's war. It's ugly. It's messy.
Mm.
What to do? Mm. Okay, so some people in the chat, our chat, is saying, which I think is... the question, I don't understand even the premise for the question. Where are all the Israelis supposed to go if you want a one-stage solution? Like, we're not the ones talking about ethnic cleansing and deporting people. I don't want to move anyone from anywhere, do you?
I think it's an important question. Thank you for that question, because I'm very eager to... to have opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But I've decided that on the question of Palestine, it's up to the Palestinians to decide.
Oh.
Really. I'm not going to advocate anything.
With a good stance, I think.
Yeah,
I think it is. I mean, if anybody from Palestine came to Norway in 1944 and tried to tell us what to do with the German occupation, I would be pretty shitty angry.
Very true. Mm. Very true. Mm.
And by the way, if anybody in 1944, when we were saturated with German troops and completely occupied by the German army, if somebody would call that a difficult conflict, I would beat them up.
Yes.
It was not a difficult conflict. It was a difficult occupation.
Yes. Yes.
And we threw them out through the armed resistance.
Yes.
Harai. We could still have been occupied.
Yeah.
But the point is, I don't think that anybody wants to send anybody away.
No.
So here's the thing. In 1948, the Palestinian people were forced to give away more than half of the best land they had.
Mm.
They never did shit to the Jews. They were not at all responsible for Holocaust. They just tried to take care of Jews, actually. So when they had to give away half their land, that was a deep injustice to them. Okay, so it's been going on, going on, going on. And Israel has expanded, done more and more colonial, horrible things, and taken more and more land, expanded the colonies and the occupiers, also called settlements and settlers, very nicely. Mm-hmm. So I think...
They are armed by the government.
And they are armed, yes.
The settlers. But
for free.
Yeah, by the government.
They're handing out machine guns.
This fascist minister, he handed out machine guns.
Yeah.
But I'll answer you, the listener, on this question by the answer that I got from one of my young medical students in Gaza, a brilliant young Palestinian woman. She said, "We want our land back. We want our land back. We don't want the one or two state solution. We want our land back." And the Israelis can do like they did in South Africa. They can decide if they want to stay and behave, follow the rules, or if they want to leave. And by the way, most Israelis have double citizenship. They have passports and they leave. They go back to the United States. They go back to Europe. And the majority of them, I don't think it's a question of expelling anybody. It's a question, it's a fundamental question of justice. And I think, you know, like South Africa, all the white supremacy people, the apartheid people, they had the choice, stay and behave or leave. Stay and follow the rules or leave.
And that should be the premises, because the land was taken away from them. And it's just, that's just facts.
Yes.
It's not complicated
at
all.
No. Yeah.
No peace, no justice. You can't just have peace, because peace is not justice or freedom. Mm. Peace is just not war.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, the Hamas charter, the political sort of fundament for Hamas, they actually say that they are supporting a two-state solution based on the 67 borders.
Yeah. They changed their charter in 2017.
67 borders and the Oslo Treaty, basically. Mm. And the Oslo Treaty was that Israel should cancel all the settlements, send back all the settlers and hand over the settlements to the Palestinians. Mm. They have done nothing of that. They have done exactly the opposite.
Mm. I think it's interesting that pro-Israeli people are often the ones, like, if you talk to them here in Sweden, are like right wing who say like harder punishment for people who steal, for the criminals. Mm. But these guys are allowed to steal whatever they want with no consequence. Like, where's your string? Where's your
consequential?
Stringens. Like, why are these double standards? Because I don't get it. It's just cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance. I don't get it. Like, why?
Well, I think Israel in many ways has sort of a ball grip on Europe and Europe's guilt complex.
Yes. Yeah.
I grew up in a pretty radical home. Mm-hmm. My mother was very radical. My father was a well-read, studied man. He was the head of Amnesty in Oslo. Mm-hmm. And my mother always said we have to support Israel because it is, number one, a socialist experiment because of the kibbutzes. Mm-hmm. And we owe them the trauma of Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And she said they made the desert bloom. And there was nobody there.
That's the story.
A people without land, land without a people.
That's the narrative. Against these horrible hordes of the dirty Arabs who wanted to kill the Jews.
Sorry for doing genocide on you. Here's some stolen land that we don't own.
So I'll tell you a well-known secret. I volunteered to go to Israel in 1967. During the 67 war.
Wow.
I went to the Israeli embassy and I said, I will go.
Yes.
Because they called for volunteers from Norwegian youth. So I went down to the embassy. I was being checked by a doctor, and they asked me...
Were you going
to
fight?
No, we were going to substitute in the kibbutzes for those who went to fight.
Oh.
So we were going to keep the kibbutzes running.
Yes.
Okay.
So I thought that was, and I was a very, at that time, very active Marxist-Leninist.
Mm. And it was an act of solidarity in your opinion.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. So I thought, solidarity, I go. And then that night, my sister, who also studied medicine, was a little bit more enlightened than me, called me and said, what the fuck are you doing? My mother tells us that you're going to Israel. Are you crazy? No. International solidarity. Come on, sister. I'm doing the good things. And she said, fuck you. Come to my place. I'll tell you. So I went to her place and I met her and Ebba Wargland, who is sort of the grand old lady of the Norwegian solidarity movement. And they gave me a lecture I'll never forget about Palestine. That was the first time ever in my life I heard about Palestine and the Palestinian people.
Oh.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
But how is that in Swedish schools? I mean, do you, is it a part of...
I don't remember one single lecture about this.
No, me neither.
No.
I mean, really, literally... Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
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 A lot of Israel.
Yes, yes. And the Holocaust.
Yeah, and also the religious part.
Yes.
Of course.
Mm.
But nothing ever in my entire...
No, I was actually... I was on a strike. I did a genocide strike outside the parliament for 2 weeks. Like, I'm not going to work. I can't stand this. So I was sitting there with my Greta Thunberg sign. Genocide strike. And these kids came up to me like, why are you striking? What's this about? I said, yeah, there's a little genocide going on in Palestine. Have you heard about it? They're like, no. But have you talked about Palestine and Israel, the conflict in the school? Like, no. I was like, oh, this is fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
This is fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, yes. 17-year-olds walking the parliament, talking about democracy, talking about our human
climate.
Rights, maybe on their, I don't know, their little tour.
Yeah.
Like these politicians. I was like, I'm sitting here and you don't even know about it. I'm like, this is fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was like goosebumps in a bad way.
Yeah. No, exactly.
That's a feeling you just have to shake off because. That's what they want us to feel. They want us to feel
powerless, hopeless, give up. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Let it just be status quo.
Exactly.
That's
what
they want. We have to organize.
I know. I agree.
Connect.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And I think that what Charlotte is saying now is an incredibly important key point, because they want us to be particular, one by one, particles.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want us to
unite,
aggregate, unite. So they try all types of fooling and threatening and in a way
gaslighting,
shaming to keep us apart because they know. And I have
when
this,
we mobilize,
we're extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
You have this beautiful
metaphor. Yeah. I have this metaphor. If everyone in the world who are pro-Palestinian, not only pro-Palestinian,
pro-justice.
Peace is not enough.
Equality.
Justice. You know?
Yes.
Freedom for all.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone had a little LED lamp with a bright red light on their head, and they didn't know that it was lighting up, but it was according to their stance and their feelings, and you flew a drone or an airplane over the world, it would be a carpet,
yes.
A massive carpet of red lights.
Yeah. Yes.
Because we are the majority.
Yeah.
Yes.
We just don't realize. And, and part of the way they try to fool us is that they don't report.
Yes, I know.
They don't tell about the demonstrations.
No, they don't.
Like the one today, I bet you, Svenska Radio, Swedish television, will not report it.
No,
they won't.
And the only way they will report it is if that I had one sentence, if they could clip one sentence from my appeal where I said something that could be, remotely be judged
as
anti-Semitic.
The armed resistance
I was at a Palestine talk back with organized by Kajsa Ekis Ekman and a few other people, and they took some statements from the media and they talked back about it, and it was so interesting because there was a SVT news thing about a demonstration, and they were like a few hundred people went like 10,000, and then they probably deliberately, I don't know, but they misquoted this song.
I think it's called Fria Palestina. And, yeah. And it's such, it's just one word, but it's so important for context, because the actual lyric is "Vi har skjutit raketer mot fienden," which is just a historical fact. And they changed it to "Vi ska skjuta raketer mot fienden," which is demonizing, and it's one word, but it's important for context. And then that was just a very, very, very good example of how the media.
But if you look at what Israel is doing, it comes to we are shooting rockets.
Oh yeah,
they are shooting. Look at the attack on the Iranian embassy.
Yes,
in Damascus. Yes. Imagine the Palestinians shooting rockets at the American embassy.
Yes,
in Al Quds in Jerusalem. And then they're talking about hiding among the civilians. Where's the Israeli Minister of Defense? It's in the middle of fucking Tel Aviv.
Yes.
Where are they living? They're living among the civilians. You saw the other day, the Israelis killed, what was it, three of Haniyeh's sons and his children on the way to an Eid party in Gaza. They've actually killed, what was it, 12 of Haniyeh. Haniyeh is one of the leaders of Hamas. The family. They killed his family.
Killed by association.
Yeah. No, they shot rockets at the car when they were on the way to their Christmas party.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that the Palestinians shot rockets at the family members of Netanyahu.
Yeah.
You know, there is such a sickening double standard that I'm ashamed sometimes to read and to turn on the news in my white reality. So I don't, actually.
And I also feel like it's so fucked up to talk about, like, I hear people just talking about, like, terrorists, this, terrorists, that. Like, where do you draw the line for terrorist? Is it someone who was a part of the 7 October attack, someone who voted for Hamas, someone who liked the Facebook post, someone who thinks that Palestinian has the right to armed resistance? Where is the red line where you can just kill someone because you think they're terrorists? Joe Biden is a terrorist in my mind.
Yes.
Sure, I don't think we have the right to kill him.
No,
Putin
exactly.
Putin is a terrorist.
Well, look at Norway, Behring Breivik, the terrorist who attacked Utøya.
Yeah, that's the fucking...
What did we do with him?
We gave him a nice cell with a TV.
And the point is that the Norwegian armed police, when they came to Utøya, they did not kill him.
No, but they could have.
They could.
Easily.
And that's the point.
Yes,
easily.
All right.
And nobody would have objected, except for the Norwegian legal system would say, should we have maybe taken him to court?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we did. And we have spent millions and millions and millions.
To give him the appropriate punishment.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. What do the Israelis do? They kill people just because they're Palestinians.
Mm.
Yeah.
And they just name them terrorists. I mean, I'm so happy we have this conversation, because it's hard to have an outlet for your rage when you see how unjust the Palestinian people are being treated, like many people in the global south. But right now, the focal point is Palestine.
Mm.
And I think we need, every one of us, we need to look in the mirror in the morning, in the bathroom, when we brushed our teeth.
Mm.
And we have to ask ourselves, what can I do for Palestine today? Because this is a time in history that will be deeply studied, and it will be asked, what did you do?
Yeah.
So, like, people who listen, please get up, get off the couch, be active, and find your way to show solidarity, active solidarity.
Yeah.
It's all very well what you feel about it, but what are you going to do about it? That's the key question.
Yeah, because, like, empathy and emotions don't change the world.
No.
Actions do.
Yes.
Actions do.
And it's kind of privilege to also sit there and, like, I was at a party with pretty famous people, and, like, media,
Abba? Stenmark.
No, but I was like that. Why don't you?
Was Palme there?
No. Rest like, in peace.
What do you think about this? Why don't you use your platform? Like you have 250,000 followers. You can really influence. Like, me. I was like that. That's a very privileged thing to. And then the people give you this. But where were you during the Rwanda genocide? Where were you during Congo? Like, just because I'm ignorant to some conflicts or I'm not everywhere all at once, it doesn't mean it's meaningless to engage in this. Because
yeah, that's the most stupid way of argumenting.
Yeah, because yes. You've been ignorant all your life. Why are you waking up now? Well, maybe because I'm on a journey of on awakening
something.
And personal, like emotional.
Yes.
I'm trying to be better. Should I just continue being an asshole, ignorant asshole? Is that better? because it's easier for you to just put me in a box.
Box. But how are you treated then? I mean,
no. Well, I'm pretty privileged because Gottsnack is financed by our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't. I'm not dependent on anxious companies.
No.
Because I had one company who we had a deal and then they pulled out because I'm very vocally pro-Palestine, but that was like 20,000 crowns. But I find it. A lot of people don't answer me, but I can't. You know, it's hard to say they're canceling me because of this because they're just not answering. But I'm like, why wouldn't they answer? What has changed since September last year?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very privileged to have this relationship with our listeners. Directly with the listeners. So if I have a few, maybe like I have 10% pro-Israeli listeners who cancel their Patreon, that's okay because I have 80% on the right side of history supporting me.
Mm. Can I say that I'm extremely happy to be here with you at Gottsnack?
Well, happy to
and,
have you.
I've always dreamed to be this kind of pop star who says you're now listening to FM 101.5 Gottsnack, and I am whatever, you know, Beyoncé.
Yes.
Beyoncé. No.
Yes.
No. Yeah. I just want to say that it's very moving to be here, and I really so much. I think we both do appreciate your bravery and your standing up for humanity and for truth, and it takes a lot of balls to do it these days, and
especially in Sweden.
Yeah, but you have to
actually in Sweden, and without you, without the honest media people, we are suffocating.
Mm.
We will die in a deluge of lies.
Yeah, but
so thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having me. You're an idol of mine. I've been following you and. For me to have you in my studio, it's a great honor. But I think I'm kind of tired of people saying like, you know, just because I don't post on social media, I'm talking at dinners, not like that. Well, they don't need you talking at dinners anymore.
No,
that's not going to help them. So you have to risk something in order to change something.
Mm.
You can't just say that you're. I'm so sad that kids are dying. That's like saying, I'm so sad women are dying. Who's killing women? Men. Who's killing Palestinians? Israelis. We have to talk about who's the perpetrator and who's the victim. And they can also be victims. And it's complicated in some fashions, but in some fashions, it's not. So I'm tired. And I think it's fucked up that like, oh, you're risking something. Wow. Like, this should be, being me should be the zero standard. The, like, this shouldn't be a thing to be me. Like,
because what are you really risking when it comes to? Yeah, but I'm talking not just about you, but everyone. Mm. We're just risking our extreme privileges and the our luxury of whatever. It's not really risking anything in my opinion, not for any of us. We're not risking anything. It's just our
we're still privileged,
comfortable living. Yeah, we're privileged. So
I think the thing with the influencer thing is they're so dependent on not stepping on anybody's toes because they have to be available for all companies to buy exposure in their channels. So they're
exposes the and improves the rotten soul of the whole
capitalistic imperialistic society. Yeah.
The rotten soul, I like that.
Yeah.
They're actually not influencers, they're defluencers. I made a new expression now.
Yeah.
They are defluencing us all because they're diffusing our social energy and our natural solidarity.
Yeah.
You know, they're really taking away from us intuitive love for other people who are suffering.
Because people look at influence and like, oh, well, if she's not talking about this, why should I?
Mm.
Right?
Mm. It's another capitalist trick to keep us all passive.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely. And of course, the power of truth will always remain. And at the end of the day, truth will prevail.
Yes.
And justice will prevail. We have to believe in that.
Yeah.
And everyone can do their little thing.
Mm.
Everyone can stand up.
Yeah. I can't do anything, said 5 billion people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I was in South Africa before Christmas. I was invited on a speaking tour when I was in the Middle East trying to get into Gaza.
Mm.
And one day, one guy who had the task to drive me to some venue, I gave a lot of lectures. He said, look up here, Dr. Matt, look there, look there. And we were driving one of the beautiful highways in South Africa. I think we were on the way to Durban. And there were some massive billboards with support Palestine, fight the genocide.
Mm.
And it was, the layout, the graphics was fantastic. It was an Israeli soldier shooting a Palestinian child.
Mm.
On these massive billboards in South Africa. And I said, wow, that's fantastic. How was that possible? And he just said, I paid it. And he was a stinking rich businessman.
Wow.
So fun.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So
for all this, to be talking to the rich
people.
Yes. Yes. Spend their money right.
Yeah.
Can't you share that about the business women in Norway?
Yeah, well, that's about the demand of divestment.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story? There are three business women in Norway just going about making. Hvor mange er det? Altså, du må hjelpe meg.
I don't remember. They started this three businesswomen. Yeah. They started that campaign.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like almost like the Swedish music artist petition.
Mm.
They did the same thing, but only with the business people in Norway, asking them to look into their investments or just like on any level.
Mm.
And it ended up
to clean up their portfolio.
Yeah.
Do you have stocks in Elbit Systems, lady?
Yeah, exactly.
And they went on a national debate show with our foreign minister.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up with him not saying that Norway should take responsibility, mm-hmm. but he was okay with the all the Norwegian businesses doing whatever, not engaging in any Israeli, but that's also double standards, because why is this so difficult? Why can't we just say no, we're not gonna trade, we're not gonna invest, we're not gonna help them
sustain this.
Yeah.
Mm. And we did it with Russia.
Yeah.
Overnight.
Yes.
So easy.
And also the Eurovision stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Olympics.
Yeah.
Russia were excluded directly.
Yeah.
But that's back to the racism thing, I think.
Yeah, and the communists has always been the
but the point enemy but the point about that, I mean, pertaining to your discussion in your hip parties with the hip influencers and the big people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a choice. It is a personal choice. And these three businesswomen in Norway made a splash because they were business people. They were like, you're supposed to be on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, fuck you. This is too serious for us not to take our moral responsibility for this situation. And they were, I mean, they were so refreshingly brave.
Yeah.
So they broke the social rules of this clammy union of business people and power people. They broke out and they said, and they were smart, young, well-dressed, articulate. And in a way, I remember that discussion in that television show. These men with ties and black jackets were quite uncomfortable.
Very.
Very, because like you, they just hit the nail and they couldn't reply. So bottom line, everyone can do something.
Yeah.
And ask yourself.
Don't listen.
Ask yourself, what are you going to tell your grandchildren about what you did in 2024 when Gaza was massacred? And second point, what you do now is what you would have done during Holocaust.
Yeah, that was Aaron Bushnell's. Like I had a, I talked about him in the morning show. Like that's a really good way to, I really think, try to reach people who are like not that invested, but like if you ever imagine like what would I do during the Holocaust or the apartheid or slavery, you're doing it now.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's just goosebumps in good ways and in bad ways and all ways, but it's just just so true because it's so easy to say when you're reading about Holocaust, like, this is so terrible.
Yes.
Like they had no social media. They didn't see it in 4K every day.
No.
They didn't,
there's no excuse now.
Yes.
No. We don't have any excuse now because we don't need the CNN or the Fox News or the SVT. We can actually look at Eye on Palestine. We can look on Al Jazeera. We can see it and we're still ignorant.
We have been doing it for 6 months.
And we have been doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is, I think, the longest interview we've had.
Oh, it's really? Yeah. Well, sometimes we every morning we do 2 hours. Sometimes when we drink, one time we did a 4-hour show.
Sometimes we drink in the morning. It becomes more fun.
Yeah. We love bubbles. Yes.
Sometimes I do some magic mushrooms and then I can go on for 6 hours. Yes. No problem. Yeah. I like to open my mind, you know, new connections in the brain.
Okay, I have to be a little bit more strict because I...
You're a doctor.
I'm a doctor, and I feel very obliged to my Muslim brothers and sisters, who I respect very much. And I know the Eid is an important.
But I think,
festival.
Actually, to be honest, you know, magic mushrooms makes you feel connected to everyone.
Okay.
Yeah, but it actually does. So you feel more empathy, more love for people. I think instead of dropping bombs, we should be dropping small aids of magic mushrooms.
Well, I think you should mainly drop that on the Israeli forces.
Yes.
And not on the Palestinians. But everyone who's cynical, bitter, hateful, angry, feel despair, should take a moderate dose of mushrooms. And then you
I want to make very clear, I don't subscribe to that recipe.
Yes.
And then you can go for the ego dose, 10 grams, to totally obliterate your ego, which is amazing. You just fall through space and time, and it's amazing.
Okay, can we close this interview now?
Yes, we can. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And this was really, really interesting and fun and nice. And I hope it reaches as many people as possible. People in the chat are saying, I wonder if Frederick is doing this interview in English because he wants this to be a break internationally. No, it's just because I have a hard time understanding Norwegian.
and this is part of the Swedish colonial attitude. We are very close neighbors.
Yeah.
And having been neighbors for many, many years, you know, we were occupied by the Danes for 400 years.
Yes.
Oh.
We were occupied by the Swedes for I don't know how many, I think 150 years.
Yes.
That's fucked up.
And then we were occupied by the Germans for 5 years.
Yes.
And we threw you all out.
Yes.
So we're a small independent nation. And I think that's part of the love story we have for Palestine.
Yeah,
we recognize their struggle.
Yeah.
And we want them to be as free as we are.
Yeah.
So Kolonia Gaza, free Palestine, end the siege, stop the bombing, lasting ceasefire, and Israel out of Gaza, free Palestine.
Yes, free Palestine.
Free Palestine.
You don't have to have been through the same trauma to empathize with
No,
people.
Exactly.
No.
Like, I can, yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.